kind of weird hearing my own echo here.
Yes, it's odd.
Yeah.
Hi, and welcome to The Question Booth. I'm Dylan Fagan.
And I'm Kathleen Quillian.
And we're so excited that you're here with us today. If you haven't tuned in before, The Question Booth is a place where people answer a big question each week. But before we start, how are you doing today, Kathleen?
I'm pretty good, Dylan. I'm looking forward to talking about the end of the world today.
Is that a hint about this week's topic?
Yes. We're listening to the answers to the question, if there were an apocalypse and you survived it, what would you be good at?
Have you ever thought the world was going to end?
I have literally never thought about it. I don't have canned peaches ready or a go bag. I'm pretty happy living in the present. How about you? Have you ever thought about it?
Absolutely, and not because I'm that type of person per se, but there was this radio host named Harold Camping who thought the world was going to end on May 21st, 2011. In fact, there were a lot of billboards advertising the date around the Metro Atlanta area, but I didn't take him seriously until I experienced a number of things the day before it was all supposed to go down. To set the scene, I was in college and it was finals week and I'd been up for a very long time, but I had this gig to fulfill with the band I was in. And I got lost somewhere in Tennessee on the way there. It was somewhere mountainous with very bad cell reception. And just as I was about to get to the field where we were supposed to perform that night, I popped a tire. And after the show, I tried to drive back to Atlanta at 1 a.m. on my undersized spare, which was hard because you're not really supposed to drive at speed on those. And I ended up getting a motel room somewhere in Alabama because I was just so exhausted. And then, at 6 a.m., a blinding light blasted through the motel window, and I was terrified that this was it. I'd been wrong, and it was all over. So I crawled out of bed, opened the curtains, and was greeted by the big glowing Wendy's sign next door. They just turned it on for the day. Obviously, I'm glad it wasn't the end of the world, but I can understand why we might start to believe in doomsday scenarios when we find ourselves in extraordinary situations.
Yes, and when you ask something in the question booth, you start to see a pattern in people's answers. This week, the reoccurring theme was healing. People thought that if everything went down, they would have the ability to keep others calm and positive.
And we'll also be talking to HowStuffWorks' Ben Bolin about apocalyptic history and realistic end-of-the-world scenarios.
We're very good at surviving, so it's not unreasonable for anyone to look at themselves and say, you know what, if this house of cards called civilization suddenly collapses, I'm going to figure out something.
But let's kick this episode off with Marissa and Moshi, because they really hit on this week's theme.
I know what I would be.
What?
The uplifter. I would be the healer, the inspirer, someone that makes somebody see the strength in themselves.
I think I might be the strategist, kind of the person bringing people together and figuring out who can do what and how they can work together to achieve the best result.
No power, I think, would be really hard for our society.
Yeah. I think it would be actually That's pretty actually... nice. We're so distracted so much of the time that it would be actually wonderful for people to get to know who they really are without being distracted.
Yeah, it brings us back to the present moment, to what's right here, right now. But it would definitely be a big adjustment.
I just feel like my intuition would lead me to the right people.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that we use our intuition. We trust ourselves.
Sure.
You can't act out of your lower brain, your survival, fight, or flight brain, because you're not thinking. You have to think with your prefrontal cortex. And that requires you being calm and centered so that you can hear what you need to hear and feel what you need to feel so you can make the right decision for yourself.
We would totally evolve our notion of what's possible, that's for sure. Because everybody has to step up and do things that they never thought was possible before. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing when people get into life-threatening situations, what they can do.
The idea of keeping calm during an apocalypse is really surprising to me. But there was actually this study out of the University of Buffalo that found that people who played the online video game Ark Age stayed pretty cool under pressure when a simulated doomsday crept in. And from the sound of the trailer, it certainly seems like they were under a lot of pressure.
Would you face annihilation for a chance to start anew?
Now, this is interesting. Researchers studied the virtual actions of around 80,000 players of this role-playing game. And on the whole, players exhibited behavior that was helpful toward one another. Antisocial behavior like violence did rise, but it was an action performed by a small fraction of the participants.
Huh. It kind of gives you hope that maybe the end of the world wouldn't all be chaos, at least, if that's any consolation.
Yes, that's an example of people coming together, virtually at least. But on the other hand, some folks might just want to stay off the grid. Here's Judy.
As long as my cats survive, I might be okay.
Yeah, a lot of people talked about how whatever happened, they would have to bring their pets.
Right. I'd have to have my pets.
Could you be like a fighter? Would you fight someone off?
Yeah, I would probably take my fingers and gouge their eyes out. Or I wouldn't want to do this, but I could pick up a cat and throw it at them. Yeah. Yeah, I could kill someone if I had to.
What would you be good at?
I'm a photographer, so I would be good at documenting the survival. Yeah.
So you would be good at documenting
apocalyptic. Yeah. I would document whatever was left.
You'd have to take a film camera.
No, I wouldn't. How do you know my iPhone wouldn't survive?
But then you'd have no power to charge
it. Come on. I'm resourceful. I would figure things out.
What would you struggle with? What would be hard for you in an apocalyptic world? Or even like a world with no power, internet.
Well, you know what? I've traveled a lot, and I seriously think I would be very happy living off the grid. So not having power and the luxuries of life that I have now, I think I would be okay.
I'll admit, sometimes it's nice to romanticize a world without power. But it's worth questioning how it would actually affect our daily lives. Things could get tough for a society that's so connected. And there's actually a fairly recent event that we can look at to get a glimpse of what it might be like. In 2003, North America experienced its largest blackout in history. A large swath of the northeastern U.S. and Canada went without power for 2 days.
It is only because of emergency generators that we are able to welcome you to our NBC News headquarters here in 30 Rockefeller Plaza in Midtown Manhattan, where the lights are out. For that matter, they are out west to Cleveland, Ohio, and north to Ottawa, Canada, in a huge and history-making blackout.
Obviously, the lights went off, but airports, subways, and tunnels also shut down. Automatic doors and elevators stopped working, and drinking water utilities were affected. Oh, and cell phone towers and ATMs? They went dark as well. Hospitals had to run on backup generators.
Sounds a little like a movie, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think it would take quite a long time for most of us to adapt to that sort of world.
Definitely. Okay, so far in the show, we've kind of heard both sides of the coin. People who would heal, people who would throw cats. But let's hear a little bit more about being a healer after the break.
We'll be right back. And we're back.
Thanks for joining us.
Let's listen in on Jaleesa and Christian in the question booth.
I think more on the psychological end, I'm pretty good at making people feel better about things. So it wouldn't necessarily be anything to keep people alive, but more of just helping people move on and move forward from like the trauma that they've endured. So you're resourceful. If we're going back to the apocalypse thing, like he was like a Boy Scout kind of guy. So he knows how to start fires and all of that. So
what was the most useful thing you learned?
In Boy Scouts?
Mm-hmm.
So I did Boy Scouts in the Bronx, New York, so it's a little different. I don't know, it's weird, but probably how to like get along well with people.
He's also really good with stress. Like,
Jesus.
Because I'm thinking, like, because I've thought about this apocalypse thing before, and I'm like, I'd be out within, like, the first day.
So much?
Because we used to watch The Walking Dead and stuff like that, and so you, like, for instance, we had a snowstorm a few years, or not a snowstorm, it was an ice storm that happened a few years ago. And you could hear all the, like, trees crashing down. I mean, it looked crazy outside when we finally, like, got to go outside.
It really was,
but
like,
he was chill the whole time. And I was freaking out because I could hear all of this crashing. I'm like, something's going to fall on the house and we're going to get hurt.
And the heater went out. That did suck. The heat went out. So we made, like,
and he found alternative heating system.
Yeah, you can make with, like, a candle and a pot. you can put them, you can put one pot upside down, a clay pot, and it'll hold in the heat more and itself would get warm and then dissipate heat longer. So yeah, it keeps you warm. I forgot about that.
I would just follow him.
She'd be all right. She's a little survivor. She's not. Especially if like one of her family members is in danger or something, she'd be like,
that's different. Then
I'll fight every zombie in here for my mom or something.
Ah, The Walking Dead. I knew it would be mentioned at some point in this episode.
Yeah, it only makes sense that it would come up with us being here in Atlanta, and people love zombies. Speaking of, I think the apocalypse might be on people's minds because of pulp culture. Between shows like The Walking Dead, The 100, and Last Man on Earth, there are plenty of takes on both the apocalyptic and the post-apocalyptic.
And there was this interesting article in the New York Times Magazine last year. It was titled, Why Are We So Obsessed with the End of the World? And it posits that it's been an obsession of ours for a very long time. I mean, there's Zeus and Odin waging war to make room for humankind, the biblical story of Noah's Ark, and if you go way back, the mass extinction of the dinosaurs is always a riveting event to both research and talk about. But I'm still endlessly fascinated by people's plans on what they would do in the event of an unfathomable disaster.
Well, let's hear another one about healing. Here's Hannah and Allie in the question booth.
I feel like I'd be the mediator, like trying to stop people from doing reckless things.
Reckless, like, how? Like killing each other?
Not necessarily killing each other. I don't know. That might be necessary. But like things that might hurt themselves. Like I'm very paranoid, so.
How so?
I don't know. I'm just always worried and I don't want people to get hurt.
I feel like I'd be like evil. Be like a terrible person.
So she'd have to stop you from killing the other people to survive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, so Allie, please don't go in there.
Yeah.
You can't hang out together.
We can't?
Well, it's like, well, obviously she wants to go against your wishes.
I always do the opposite that she says, so
it's true.
What would you not be good at? What would be a really big challenge for you?
My stepsister says I wouldn't be good at fending for myself.
So you need to be in a pack of people.
Yeah, I need like a good support group.
Yeah, I wouldn't be good at being alone.
I would get eaten. Yeah, we would be good to like support each other in a closet. Like, I'd be like, Allie, it's fine. We're going to stay here. And she'd be like, okay, but I'm really claustrophobic. And I'd be like, it's fine. We could do this. But I need you to stay with me or else I'm going to die too. If we got each other, anything's possible, right?
Totally.
So after hearing about some of the roles that people might play in the apocalypse, we wanted to know more about why we're fascinated with the topic and what an actual doomsday scenario might look like.
Yes, and we'll talk to someone all about the end of the world after this break. We're back, and we're excited to have How Stuff Works host Ben Bolin with us in the studio. You may know him from our podcast, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know and Ridiculous History.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a show that takes a deep dive into conspiracies and has covered many apocalyptic possibilities, so we thought he'd be a great person to talk to. Thanks for joining us, Ben.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, why are we so fascinated with the potential of an apocalypse? Do you think it's Hollywood or something else? Like, why are we so amped up about something that is so terrifying?
Yeah, this is a fascinating question, and it's one that people have been trying to answer for a very long time on numerous levels. One thing that is always intriguing to discover is that for almost every year in the timeline of modern history, dating back even centuries into the past, there's been some group or some individual that says, no, really, this time it's the end of the world in some regard. And they might define it in a number of different ways. So the end of the world, quote unquote, might be the fall of the civilization in which we reside, or it might be an ecological disaster, or it might be a catastrophic war or a spiritual cataclysm, right? Like the loss of the prominent religion of the time. The reason this is so compelling is because regardless of who you are, where you come from, we all function as the protagonist of our own personal story, and everybody else, no matter who they are, is at best like a character foil for us.
Speaking of protagonists, let's rewind for a second and revisit the titles that people gave themselves in the booth this week.
The Uplifter.
The Strategist.
The Mediator.
So we, being the main characters of our own personal story, must necessarily be living at the titular moment in history, or one of. So there's a little bit, and I don't want to sound condescending here, but there's a little bit of implied narcissism that out of all the times in the world, I or you or you or any of us happen to be at the moment. We want to live in important times, even if those times are terrifying. It's also strange because this belief, which is so prevalent, full disclosure, I'm totally one of these people. It's interesting because the facts don't compare one-to-one with the personal experience. There's, I wouldn't say conclusive, but pretty compelling evidence that we are collectively living in one of the most peaceful times in human history. When you measure the amounts of war, when you measure the way that we have succeeded in addressing disease, we're not great at everything, but we're very good at surviving. So it's not unreasonable for anyone to look at themselves and say, you know what, if this house of cards called civilization suddenly collapses, then I'm going to figure out something.
Can you tell us about some end-of-the-world predictions from the late 20th and early 21st century?
Sure, yeah. So there are a couple of different categories. One would be something that has a spiritual basis. A leader of a religious or spiritual movement has received what they perceive to be a divine revelation, a prophecy. And this would be typically assigned to a specific date. And the problem with that is that those dates inevitably arrive. And when they do, so far as we know, the world doesn't end. So those have a shelf life, those predictions.
You may remember Heaven's Gate from March 26, 1997, for example.
They called themselves Heaven's Gate, a cult started in the 70s by a man named Marshall Applewhite, who later called himself Doe. A spaceship or UFO, he told the group, would pick up their souls and take them to begin their new lives. 1997 was the year of the Hale-Bopp comet. In late March of that year, as the comet grew brighter, Doe became convinced the comet was the sign to shed their bodies and exit Earth.
And then there would be the idea of a technological catastrophe. So Y2K, right? We remember that. That made a lot of newsrooms very happy from 1998 to December 31st, 1999.
The basic idea on Y2K was that for convenience, all these computer programs, when it came to do dates, you only needed two numbers. Why use four numbers when you only need two? And then they recognized, what date is a computer going to think it is when we get to 2000?
Even Star Trek's Leonard Nimoy was on TV, trying to prepare us for the worst.
At the stroke of midnight, January 1st, 2000, elevators may stop. Heat may vanish. Credit cards and ATMs may cease to function.
The third category would be something related to geopolitics, for instance, like the bomb is going to drop, right? Or someone goes back to an ancient prophecy or something they think to be a prophecy like Nostradamus, and they say, hey, I have figured out the interpretation of this medieval language. And it turns out that 1996, you guys, is when everything goes wrong.
This Nostradamus passage in particular was very popular online after the September 11th attacks.
Two steel birds will fall from the sky on the metropolis. The sky will burn at 45 degrees latitude. Fire approaches the great new city. Immediately, a huge scattered flame leaps up. Within months, rivers will flow with blood. The undead will roam the earth for a little time.
Super intense. But in reality, it's a sloppy translation. The big giveaway is the inclusion of steel. Nostradamus died in 1566. Steel wasn't invented until 1854. Okay, back to Ben.
The last one, and perhaps the increasingly compelling one for a lot of people, would be the idea of ecological catastrophe. The bees disappear. Ocean acidification reaches an unsustainable level. And this triggers a domino effect that results in humanity's inability to grow food or to find clean water. So those all exist together, and you can discover different interpretations of those, and they're reflected in fiction. Fiction itself, if we were to personify it, is a huge fan of apocalyptic stories, because the rule of fiction is you always make it personal and you always raise the stakes. And it's tough to raise the stakes higher than, you know, the end of the world.
All right. We heard from people in the question booth, but now I've got to ask you the question, Kathleen. So here it is. If there were an apocalypse and you survived it, what would you be good at?
I think I would just dip out.
You'd dip out?
Yeah. I know that's a little bit morbid, but I don't know. I look at Walking Dead and all of these post-apocalyptic worlds, and I don't want to live that quality of life. It seems pretty low. Like, why am I waking up in the morning? I'm pretty content with how great my life is right now, and maybe that was supposed to happen for a reason.
I know that this all sounds dark and pretty terrible, but I think we're all just trying to figure out how to keep our world as normal as possible, no matter what happens. I feel like we go through worst-case scenarios in our head all the time about different things, just to figure out what it is we would have to do to get through it and to provide for others. We want to plan, and we want a routine, and we want to wake up every day and find our purpose. But the end of the world, to me, is just contemplating that scenario on a much larger scale. I think we want to find comfort and comfort others if everything goes wrong. I also think if, and this is a big if, people have a community, I think they can find a way to make it through. That being said, I don't ever want to have to find out if that's true.
Me either. And since some of this week's episode sounded a lot like doom and gloom, we want to leave with this clip from brothers Elliot and Ethan, who have a simple solution if everything falls apart.
What would you do? What's your escape plan?
I dig a hole and I hide in it and bake ramen.
What would be hard for you?
Cooking, probably.
Cooking. So you have to stick with your brother because he can cook.
Yeah, you have
the
to bring
ramen
me.
In a hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll go in your ramen hole.
I'll give
hole.
You one strip of ramen a day. One little strip.
And we want to know what you think. What would your role be in an apocalypse? Would you dip out? Would you heal or hide? You can write to us at the question booth at howstuffworks.com with your answer. We'd like to give a special thanks to executive producer and our absolute guiding hand, Julie Douglas. Thanks as well to senior producer Annie Reese and to Ben Boland for speaking with us this week. We'd also like to thank Pond City Market for hosting the question booth. The question booth is written, edited and scored by me, Dylan Fagan, and my co-host, Kathleen Quillian. You have so many of my thanks, Kathleen.
Thanks, Dylan. And thanks to everyone who came into the booth and spoke to me about this question. And if you're in Atlanta, you can visit the question booth too. We're on the second floor of Pont City Market, 12 to 5 p.m., Friday through Sunday. You can also follow us on social media. We're the question booth on Instagram and Facebook, and question_booth on Twitter.
So, what are we talking about next week?
Next week, we're talking all about smells.
Hot Cheetos.
Does it really have a smell?
It does.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to hearing that. But until then,
see you in the question booth.